ओम शांति। मधुबन इज अ वेरी बिग यज्ञ। दैट्स व्हाट माय टॉपिक टुडे इज, बिकमिंग और बीइंग द प्रोटेक्टर्स ऑफ द यज्ञ। यज्ञ इज अ संस्कृत वर्ड which means sacrificial fire, and in India sacrificial fire is of great importance, and of course everything is based on what happens at the confluence age. All that goes on in bhakti, on the path of devotion. So on the path of devotion, saints, sadhus, sannyasis, gurus, you know, sages, and even bhagats, devotees, they arrange sacrificial fires. And specially for a reason, not that for no reason. Usually when there is a bad omen on anyone, or there is a problem, there's no solution, or maybe there is a war and they want peace, maybe there is no rain and they want rain, maybe there's too much rain and they want to stop that rain, or anything, any obstacle which cannot go in any other way. So they arrange sacrificial fires. And even on auspicious occasions, they have sacrificial fires. In a marriage ceremony, they'll have a sacrificial fire, and the bride and the bridegroom have to sacrifice something. The mantras are chanted. In the midst of those mantras, the fire is lit, and the fire has to keep on going day and night, all 24 hours. It should not be extinguished until that bad omen is gone or that auspicious occasion is finished. So auspicious occasion also, for that they have sacrificial fire, so that no bad omens or obstacles come in the way. So it is either to not allow obstacles to come, or if there are obstacles, that they have the sacrificial fire to finish those obstacles. And they have to keep the fire lit all the time. If the fire by mistake gets extinguished, or they are careless and there's rain fall or something and the fire goes, then they think that the bad omen will become worse, or the obstacle will even increase. So they protect that sacrificial fire. And usually the protectors are the Brahmins, Laukik Brahmins. So actually in India, different clans were established for different types of work. Brahmins are considered to be the highest clan, and they are needed for every occasion. If it's a bad omen, then also they are needed. If it's an auspicious occasion, also they are needed. Anything. At the time of birth, a Brahmin is needed. At the time of death, also a Brahmin is needed. Marriage, a Brahmin is needed. Means they are like the priests. And they are the protectors of the yajna. And also, they are needed at every step to protect religion. So religion of the soul, religion of whatever their bodily religion is. So a Brahmin is needed. And therefore Brahmins are considered protectors of religion. They're not supposed to have any Laukik jobs. But the others who are not Brahmin clan, they feed the Brahmins. So Brahmins in the society do that job of protection. Then we have the Kshatriya clan, the warrior clan. And that warrior clan is supposed to protect the borders of the country. So usually you will see the Kshatriyas, the warrior clan, they usually join the army, the air force, the navy, and they guard the borders of the country. But of course others also join, but then mainly you'll find the warrior clan. And then the third are the Vaishyas, the businessmen. They are supposed to do business and earn money. And then help the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas. And the fourth clan, the Shudras, they are supposed to help them. So the business clan. And they are the rich people. The Brahmins and Kshatriyas are not rich people. The Vaishyas or the business people are the rich people. And then the fourth are the Shudras. And they are actually like government servants. They work for the government. They work under someone. They are dependent. So all these four types of clans are necessary in any society. If all become just the Brahmins, then who will protect the borders? Who will do the business? Who will be serving? You know, so Shudras are needed for that. And in the Gita, there is a mention of these four clans. But not the Brahmins are forgotten. Instead, the Deity clan is included. So Deity clan does not come in the four clans, Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, meant to serve in the society. But then the variety form of Vishnu, as they show in Gita, the Deity clan is included, which actually stands for the four ages. Golden Age, the Deity clan, Silver Age, the Warrior clan, Copper Age, the Business Class, the Business clan, and Iron Age, Shudras, the servers. But then the Brahmins are forgotten because nobody knows the Confluence Age. So at this time, Baba says, you are the true Brahmins because you are direct children of Brahma. Shiv Baba comes and creates Brahmins through Brahma at this confluence age and establishes the sacrificial fire to drive away bad omens, it's an auspicious occasion too, when God is with His children. And this is not a physical sacrificial fire, but it is the Rudra Jnana Yajna, the Yajna or sacrificial fire of knowledge. Because God comes and imparts knowledge at this time. And those who understand this knowledge, or those who take a new spiritual birth through this knowledge, they become the Brahmins. And they become the protectors of the Yajna. And in the scriptures, there are many stories, you know, that usually when these saints and sages, they used to arrange any sacrificial fire to drive away any bad omen, devils would come. And they would not like that the bad omens should go. And they would try to create obstacles. They would come and just, you know, hover around the sacrificial fire and try to put impure things in the sacrificial fire. Actually, only pure things are put in the sacrificial fire, not impure things. So what usually is put is rice and, you know, even vegetables and ghee, you know, something pure. But actually, three main ingredients are put in the sacrificial fire to keep the fire lit all the time. The main thing that is put is rice. One thing is rice. And rice is supposed to be something long, you know. And then the next thing they put is sesame seeds. And the third is they put oil, ghee. So rice, sesame seeds, ghee, and also they put carrots and something good, something pure, auspicious, some good vegetables. And actually what Baba says that I come and establish this yajna, and the three main ingredients which are necessary to keep the sacrificial fire constantly lit are your body, mind and wealth. Of course, the five vices, that's different. That means we sacrifice the five vices. But to keep this sacrificial fire always lit, the body, mind and wealth have to be always put in the sacrificial fire. So when they show in the scriptures that these gurus, sadhus, saints, sages, they had the sacrificial fire lit, the devils would wander around, you know, trying to put impure things in the sacrificial fire. That is, put an obstacle in the way. So the sages used to get very afraid. Oh, what will happen now? These devils have come and they are going to ruin our sacrificial fire. Then the deities would come and then drive away the devils, you know, like that. They show Sri Ram appearing and then Ram giving drishti to all the devils, and devils would be frightened and run away, like that. So that means the descent of God. So when God is protecting the yajna, He does not allow the devils to interfere. But devils try their utmost to interfere and ruin the sacrificial fire. So these are stories in the scriptures. Now, Baba says that's all a memorial of the confluence age. And at this time, God has created Brahmins for protecting the sacrificial fire which He has established. And we Brahmin children are the protectors of this yajna, the sacrificial fire, and we have to see to it that we keep this yajna lit all the time till Sangam Yuga finishes and we all return home along with Baba. And then there are many, many disciplines which the Brahmins have to follow. Who is considered to be a Brahmin? In the scriptures, Brahmins are given strict disciplines to follow. But we say that, you know, in Kali Yuga, no one really is a Brahmin, because nowadays those who even consider themselves to be Brahmins, they are not really doing all those religious rites anymore. They are working for the government, or they are also maybe in the armed forces, or they may be even businessmen. But in the earlier days, from Copper Age onwards, this was the custom, that the one who is a Brahmin, he would never ever do anything else except protect religion. But we say now it's the end of Kali Yuga, and a very, very strong sign of Kali Yuga, Iron Age, is that all the other three clans, Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, the Brahmin clan, the warrior clan, the business class, they've all become Shudras, because they're all dependent, you know, nobody is protecting the religion. And even when, if they are warriors, how many are really very faithful to the country? Not 100%. So we say even the protectors of the country, they deceive the country, they go and become traitors, you know, or they tell the spies of the enemy country the secrets of the country. You know, so many people are caught like that, because they get money and then they give away the secrets to the enemy. So we say in Hindi, the rakshak means the protectors become bhakshak. And bhakshak means they deceive the country. Or they deceive the one whom they are supposed to protect. Like, you know, Indira Gandhi was the Prime Minister of India. And how she was killed, assassinated by her own guards. Her own guards, who were supposed to guard her, to protect her, they killed her. And right at near point, you know, of course they would be very close to her. Somebody far would not be able to shoot her from a distance. But they were so close to her, and they killed her, you know, right from close range. So otherwise, who could approach her, as she was the Prime Minister of the country? So they deceived her. So we say the protector clan becomes a deceiver, then that is a sign of the decay of religion. That even these different clans, they give up their real responsibilities. They deceive. And the Vaishyas are supposed to protect the society by giving them money, wealth, donation, charity, because they're supposed to be rich. So, but then today Baba says how on the name of charity they are, you know, actually accumulating. They are gaining more. They want name, fame, prestige, as Baba said in yesterday's Murli, that real charity is quite different from donation. Donation could be in an external form and you get your name and fame, but it doesn't become real charity. Real charity is when it is incognito. When your right hand is giving donation and even your left hand doesn't know that the right hand has given donation. It should be so incognito. The thought of any name or fame, that's out of question, but it should be so incognito that even the other hand doesn't know that the right hand has given something. And also when it gives, the one to whom it gives, that one should be a worthy, you know, a receiver. If he doesn't need it and the giver, the donor is giving just for the sake of his own name, the receiver doesn't really need it. But because the donor wants to make his name and he gives, even that is not charity. You know, once Rotary Club in India, in Bombay, there was an incident. So Rotary Club wanted to donate blankets to the poor people. And many poor people came living in shanties and, you know, huts and all, you know, many. But then they distributed in thousands. And after a few days when they went to those shanties, those huts and all, to find out if they were really using those blankets, and they came to that none of them were using and they didn't even have them. And what happened? They sold them so that they could get money to drink, you know? Yeah. So they didn't need them. But the Rotary Club people just wanted to make, you know, have a name and some fame. They wanted their name in the newspaper. They wanted to do something or to protect themselves from the income tax and this and that from the government. You know, many reasons. So those people said, we didn't need them, but we were called and therefore we took and we sold them so that we could drink and enjoy. We didn't need them. So the needy people, the really needy people, if they are given, and the best part of that is, supposing I'm eating food, and someone really needy comes, and I'm eating, but I can, you know, just sacrifice the food, but that one needs more, and I'm able to give to him. That is real charity. It doesn't matter if I don't have. I have enough. It doesn't matter if I don't eat. I've eaten in the morning. He hasn't even eaten in the morning. Okay, this is real charity. I don't have to tell anybody I gave him because he was hungry. I don't have to tell anyone. That's real charity. So, Baba says that now all the four clans have all become Shudras. All of them. Because they are not really fulfilling their responsibilities. But now at the confluence age, you children become the true Brahmins. And you are protecting this sacrificial fire which God has created. And the whole fire, whole world will be incinerated in this sacrificial fire, when Baba says. It has a very deep meaning. Because when we become pure, we become perfect, we become, complete, then the sacrificial fire will end, yes. But then, when we become complete, we need a perfect world to rule. Because Baba says, at this time you are self-sovereigns, and then you will become world-sovereigns. Only self-sovereigns will become world-sovereigns. So we are becoming self-sovereigns, and therefore we will surely become world-sovereigns in the future, as Baba said in yesterday's Murli too. And therefore this world has to change, because we are getting ready for that new world. And the impure souls have to return home, because they cannot stay in a pure world. Therefore Baba says the whole world will be incinerated, the impure world will be incinerated, burnt, destroyed in this sacrificial fire. The fire of destruction starts from the sacrificial fire. It doesn't mean that it starts from here in a physical way. But because we become complete, we need a pure world to live in. So we are the protectors of this yajna. Now, in the scriptures, there is a big mention of the responsibilities of a Brahmin. Who is a Brahmin? And how does he protect the religion? So a Brahmin is the one who is always studying and teaching, studying and teaching. He doesn't do any other job, because teaching job is the most noble job considered, in a religion. Teaching others is such a great job, because one becomes so knowledgeable. That's only why he can teach. Someone who is not knowledgeable cannot teach. So the one who is studying and teaching, that is why a Brahmin is always shown with a scripture in his hand. Because he is reading and he is also narrating, relating. Reading and also telling others. So that's the job of a Brahmin, and this way he protects the religion. Because he is reading himself and he is teaching others. So this is the work of a Brahmin, and Baba says you have to always study and teach others, study and teach others. Whatever you have studied, you have to tell everyone. It's not only for yourself. This knowledge is for giving to others. If you are not able to give to others, it means even you have not understood. That's what Baba says. Some say, Baba, we cannot give gyan to others. Baba says, if you cannot, that means you have not understood. Otherwise, why can't you give gyan to somebody if you have understood the gyan? Can't you speak? You have that, you are able to speak. Ordinary things you speak, not that you are dumb. So we all speak. We all share what our feelings are. We are able to share that with others. Then why can't we give gyan to others? Why can't we? But why we are not able to give gyan to others? Because we are not doing the churning of that. We are not having thoughts of that. Probably we'll hear and then take it out from the other ear. But then if we are really taking the knowledge within, we should be able to churn and then share that with others. So that's the first responsibility of the Brahmin, in order to keep the yajna fire lit constantly. Study and teach. Study and teach. That's the Brahmin. And then the second, in Hindi we say parna padhana. Study and teach. And the second qualification of a Brahmin is in order to keep the sacrificial fire lit constantly. The aim is to keep the sacrificial fire lit constantly. Then that Brahmin has to always keep on sacrificing himself and allowing or making others to sacrifice. Sacrificing the self and making others to sacrifice. And the word usually uttered while sacrificing is swaha, swaha, swaha. It comes from the word swa. Swa means self. So whatever belongs to me, it belongs to Baba. Swaha, swaha, swaha. This body, which I think is mine, no, now I say it belongs to Baba. The body belongs to Baba, the mind belongs to Baba, the wealth belongs to Baba. And this is why in order to keep the sacrificial fire lit constantly, they have three main ingredients as I mentioned, rice, sesame seed and ghee. So the rice stands for the body. This body belongs to Baba, so something long like this, like the grain of rice. And sesame seed is something very tiny. So that means the mind. So body, mind, and ghee means wealth. So the wealth also we consider it that it belongs to Baba. So when this body belongs to Baba, mind belongs to Baba, wealth belongs to Baba, and then we become the trustees. Baba doesn't need them. What is he going to do with my body, with my mind, with my wealth? The body is perishable, it belongs to matter and it's going to be destroyed anyway. What will Baba do with my body? He doesn't need anything. Baba is the bestower. But if I consider this body to be belonging to Baba, then even if there's some problem, anything, you know, physical body, bodily problem, I will not be very upset or unhappy. I'll say, it doesn't matter, it's Baba's. Whatever Baba wants, how he wants to protect is his responsibility. I have surrendered it to Baba. Yes, I take very good responsibility of protecting it, of looking after it well. It's like you have somebody else's property or somebody else's car, for example, and that person tells you, please, keep my car and see that it is safe. I will come back after a few months and I'll take it back. Won't you take good care of that car and see that it is, you know, kept clean all the time? The engine is kept running time after time, because if you don't run the engine, then it gets over. It just exhausts. So that I will take care of the car, but I know it doesn't belong to me. It doesn't belong to me. It belongs to somebody. It's in my care. And when that person will come, I'll have to return it to him. So when I say this body belongs to Baba, that means I'm just its caretaker. That's all. It doesn't belong to me. But I will take good care of it. And even if something happens, I'm not very upset or I'm not unhappy, because I know it's not mine. If I'm attached to it, then I'll be very sad, I'll be very unhappy, very upset. Oh, what will happen now, what will happen now? No, no, it's Baba's, it's not mine. So Baba says this body is Baba's, the mind belongs to Baba. When you say, my mind is upset, Baba tells in the Murlis, doesn't he? How can you say, my mind, does it belong to you? Does the mind belong to you? How can you say, keep giving the excuse, my mind is naughty, my mind is upset, my mind is sad, my mind is not able to concentrate. It's not your mind at all. That means you haven't yet given your mind to Baba. So if I have that consciousness, mind also belongs to Baba, then who else will be in this mind except Baba? So the mind means the sesame seed, then the ghee, money, wealth. Wealth also belongs to Baba. Baba doesn't need your wealth. But Baba says, consider it to belong to Baba, then you won't misuse that wealth. You will not, you know, waste that wealth. Very often, you know, I know many people, when they earn a lot of money, they just waste that money in parties and picnics and, you know, just joy rides. For no reason they waste that money, because they have lots of money, drinking, smoking, gambling, you know, all that. Because the thing, it belongs to them, it's their money. I know of a youngster, you know, he was drinking. I said, why do you know, you're so young. He said, well, I'm earning. I can use my money in the way I want, so what? Nobody can stop me because it's my money. Yeah? So they are proud that it's my money. So the one who is using that money for these things, it means he has an attachment to the money, and also he thinks he has the liberty to use that money in whatever way he wants, because it is his money. But when we say it belongs to Baba, then we cannot use that money for any cause which is against Srimad. So that, because we are protectors. It belongs to Baba. So that we can't use that money for any other cause, except for God's work. It becomes a very big responsibility. God doesn't want it. He's not going to make palaces in Paramdham. Vibhava says that. He doesn't need that wealth. But with our own body, mind and wealth, we are establishing heaven. We don't go door to door and ask for donations. People in the world do that. You know, other charitable organizations or missionaries, they go from door to door asking for donations to keep their missionary running. But Baba says, you can't do that. You can't beg. You are children of the bestower. How can you beg for donations? You can't do that. You use your own body, mind and wealth for the establishment of golden age. And Baba gives the example of Mahatma Gandhi. You know, when India was under British rule and Mahatma Gandhi lit this fire of independence, so many people came to him, helped him, and they surrendered their wealth, everything to him. Whatever instructions he gave, they did it in order to make the country independent, to free it from the British rule. And they surrendered themselves, all the wealth they gave to Mahatma Gandhi to use it for that freedom. And, well, those who did that, they were called the freedom fighters, you know. So they went to prison, the Britishers put them in jail and, you know, many things. That's a very big history. But those who fought in this way, because his slogan was non-violence. Not through violence he wanted the freedom. He wanted through non-violence. So the body, mind and wealth of those people were used for it. And afterwards, when India did become independent, who became the rulers? Those who were the freedom fighters. Those who helped Mahatma Gandhi by giving their wealth and, you know, in every physical way, they helped Mahatma Gandhi. And then they formed the constitution. And they became the rulers of the country. So this is what Baba says in the Murli, is that at this time you help God. God can do everything himself, yes. But then God says, I need your support, your help. And we help God with the body, mind and wealth, and thereby we change this world from hell to heaven. Then who will rule in that world? The one who has helped God. So we become the rulers. So Baba says, for that you have to say swaha, swaha, Baba, this belongs to you, it belongs to you. I know, you know, in foreign lands, it's so sweet, so lovely to hear when double foreigners, you know, when I go anywhere, come sit in Baba's car, come to Baba's home. So very many times before, the first time I went, everybody said, come to Baba's home. I thought that come to Baba's home means come to the center, but actually they took me to their house. And they said, come to Baba's house, sit in Baba's car. So I thought, maybe this is the center's car, but actually it was their own personal car. But Baba's car, Baba's house, Baba's. So this is such a beautiful feeling. And therefore you feel that you are just a trustee. And you're so light because you're a trustee. You're not attached. Like for example, if I'm attached to this sofa, and if I'm told to get up, and if I'm attached, I can't get up with the sofa. It's impossible. I have to give it up, no? I have to let go. Only then I can be light to get up. So, if I think it is mine, I become so heavy. So Baba makes us light by saying, it belongs to Baba and we become trustees. So swaha, swaha. So this will keep the yajna running. With our own body, mind and wealth, we are protecting the yajna, looking after the yajna. So that's the second point for a Brahmin. The first is studying and teaching, and this way expanding the family. Because at this time we say that Baba is establishing three things. At the same time, other prophet souls who come in this world, they establish only one thing, and that's a religion. Christ came and established Christianity. Muhammad came, established, Islam. And Guru Nanak came, established Sikhism. So, each prophet's soul comes and just establishes a religion, that's all. But God comes and establishes three things at the same time. Religion, then a kingdom, and thirdly a family. So these three things God comes and establishes at the same time. Those prophet souls don't establish a family. Families are all different. They, of course, Christ had his apostles and this way the expansion of his religion took place. That's a different thing. But he didn't establish a family. He didn't establish any kingdom. The kingdom in Christianity came much later on. In any religion, the kingdoms or domains, they come much later. The kings come much later. So Baba says, I establish all the three at the same time. And Brahmin, Deity, Kshatriya, all the three clans at the same time. The Brahmins become the deities as well as the Kshatriyas. Some will go only in silver age, they might not come in golden age. And I'm establishing a kingdom. Baba in every Murli speaks about the 108, the world sovereigns, and then 16,108 in the royal family, 900,000 subjects of golden age and so on. So the establishment is happening now of that kingdom. And then it's a family too. In golden age, it's like a world family. The whole world is like one family. Lakshmi Narayan as the sustainers of that family. And everyone belongs to that family of Lakshmi Narayan, that's what we say. That's why Vishnu is called the sustainer. Because Lakshmi Narayan are like the parents for the whole kingdom. But then how when Copper Age begins, everything is scattered and other religions come and then conversions take place, and at the end of Kali Yuga we are all scattered in different parts of the world. And then when Baba comes, Baba selects, chooses, and those souls of golden age are brought back to one family with the help of the knowledge of soul and supreme soul. We come together. So at this time we are all one family. Though we belong to different cultures, whatever it may be, but we say it's one Brahmin culture. And double foreigners say with pride that we are the original Bharatvasis. Aren't you? Who are all of you? Do all of you have that intoxication? Yes? And what was the original Bharat? Not just the India of today. It was the ruler of the whole world. And we were those rulers of the whole world. The word Bharat, has a meaning. It's a Sanskrit word. Bha means light. Abha means light, like a halo. And Rat means filled with. So Bharat means that nation which was filled with light. A nation filled with light. That means behind everyone's head there was a crown of light. This is what it really means. Each one was crowned. May not be crowned with the crown of jewels, but at least crowned with the crown of purity. Each one, each deity in golden age is crowned with the crown of purity. So, we are the protectors of this yajna. And we surrender our body, mind and wealth, and we make others also do the same, so that we are able to create a new kingdom for ourselves and for all of us together. Many people tell us that you talk about heaven, golden age, you will become sovereigns, you will become this, you will become that, and you'll have lots of wealth and this and that. Isn't that greed? Many people in India tell us, isn't that greed? But that means you're like greedy people. You talk about heaven and this and that and golden age, and we'll have rivers of milk and honey and all that. He say, no, this is not greed. We want everybody to come in that world. But those who say we want mukti, moksha, liberation, we don't want to come in this world is a world of sorrow, we don't want to come back in this world, we want to be liberated for good, they are actually very selfish. Because they want only for themselves. I should get moksha, I should not come back in this world, I should be freed from every bondage, I don't want to be in this world, I just want to be liberated. So I. So that is actually selfishness. I'm only thinking about myself. What about others? But here Baba says, we will make this whole world into a world of heaven. But they think the world can never become a world of happiness. This world is always a world of sorrow. So Baba says, when you give jnana to someone, feel their pulse. How do you feel their pulse? This soul, you know, what is in his mind? Because if a soul is really very keen to see that this world changes and becomes a happy world, a loving world, a peaceful world, a harmonious world, you know, a good world, that means that soul is a soul of golden age. Definitely. Because those sanskars are there in him of golden age. But he's looking for the truth, looking for how this world can become a better place. And he doesn't know the way. And he'll come to you and immediately become a Brahmin. But then there are some who are the copper aged souls. They come in this world only when copper age begins, not when golden age and silver age is there in this world. So they are like the pessimists. If you tell them this world will be a better world, a happier world, the golden aged world, the deity world, oh, we don't want that. We want liberation. We want moksha. We don't want to come in this world. Because those souls don't have the sanskar of golden age and silver age, of true happiness. They've never experienced this world to be really a very beautiful world. And therefore they will never think that this world can ever become a good world. And then there are the souls of Iron Age, because souls are still coming from the soul world, no? The population of the world is growing. It hasn't stopped. It's growing, multiplying, like anything. And that means many souls are still coming from the soul world. And which are those souls? And if they come to you, they will never accept this jnana. They'll say, we don't want another heaven. We are already in heaven. We're already in heaven, we have all the wealth, we have all the happiness we can think of, we're not looking for God, we don't want God, and this is heaven for us. Because they have slept for nearly 5,000 years in the soul world, and they have just come. So they are very energetic. And because they are new souls, they have all the happiness of this Kali Yuga world. They have the money, they have the health, they have everything. Because they are the new souls and they don't want to look for any other heaven. Because every soul has to pass through its golden, silver, copper, iron stages. So we souls pass through our golden age stage 5,000 years ago. And they are passing through that now. So this is such a big difference. Is it not? So Baba says, of course, but you have to give Baba's jnana to everyone. Whoever will be of Satyuga of Golden Age, he will come himself. And so that is what we Brahmins are, to keep the sacrificial fire lit continuously. So the first thing is to study and teach. The second thing is to always sacrifice yourself and make others sacrifice. Maybe even the vices. I become pure and I make others pure. That is, I become holy and I tell others to become holy. So that is to keep the sacrificial fire continuously lit. I consider everything to belong to Baba and I make everyone else also feel that whatever belongs to you actually belongs to Baba. So think in this way. What Baba says, the Murli, change mine to yours. In Hindi we say mera to tera. Mera is mine and tera is yours. So instead of mera, say tera. You know, there's a story of Guru Nanak. Guru Nanak, who was a founder of the Sikh religion. So he was a businessman, and he was actually weighing something. So he started on one side of the scale, he put the weights, and on the other side he was putting potatoes or whatever or fruits. So he said, put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13. The word 13 in Hindi means tera. The word tera has two meanings. Tera means yours, and tera also means 13. So when he said tera, immediately must be the soul of Guru Nanak must have entered in his body. And at that very moment he said, tera, 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 tera. And he didn't go further than that. That means, I'm yours, 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 means surrender to God. And he gave up all his, you know, his lokic life, and then just went into deep tapasya. From that moment onwards, that's what this showed. Because he just switched over to tera, means everything belongs to you. It was like a new life for him. So we also say that Brahmins means a new life. Every Brahmin is considered to have two lives. One life is the lokic life, the physical life with lokic parents, of course, that's one life, those who have given birth to the to this body. But then Brahmins in Hindi, the word used for them, dvij. Dvij. Dvij means born twice. Born twice. When they make a vow or any promise to protect the religion, then it's like a new life for them. So Brahmins are those who live two lives. The lokic life and then the alokic life, the spiritual life. But nowadays, of course, those lokic Brahmins don't do all that. But they still call themselves the dvija, especially when they wear the sacred thread round their neck. They have a special ceremony and they say that's their second life. And the sacred thread is actually round their neck, is meant actually for a transformation in their life, for them to become holy, to become pure. But they don't become pure in that way. So it's not a next life, a new life, but that's the just a ritual which they perform. So, but Baba says, you lead a new life. What your original, your previous life was the Kalyugi life, but now you are at the confluence age. The whole world is in Kalyug, in Iron Age. If you ask anybody, they'll say we are all in Iron Age, Kalyug. But we Brahmins say, no, we are at the confluence age. We are not in Iron Age. Like for the one who sleeps very late, 4 o'clock may be still night for him. But then for Brahmins who wake up before 4, and even if we wake up at 4, we say we are late, we are late. Oh, I should have woken up at 3:30. That's Amrit Vela for us. So we souls wake up early. That means it's really the morning. Sangam Yuga means the new day is beginning. It's the dawn. The sun of knowledge has arisen. But those who are in ignorance, they are still thinking that this is Kali Yuga, this is Iron Age. So we say Brahmins means who are born twice. The second birth is the birth of a true Brahmin. So that's why Baba says, forget your past. Whatever you did, maybe you won't remember your past lives, but even in this life, what you were before you came to Baba was like a past life for you. Now you have taken a new life, so you should never remember anything of that past life which you went through before becoming a Brahmin. And then a Brahmin, there are four main important things for a Brahmin, the main four disciplines, and they tally with the word Brahma. You know, Brahma. So the first word is Brahma Mahurat. Brahmin is the one who wakes up at Brahma Mahurat. Amrit Vela time between 3 and 5 is called Amrit Vela, Brahma Mahurat. The time of Brahma, when Brahma comes, or the time to experience the Brahma element. That's the dawn. You know, when the sun rises, the whole sky is filled with red, golden red color. So that golden red color actually indicates the soul world. The time for the descent of the sun of knowledge, so the confluence age. And therefore those souls, Brahmins who wake up at that time, spiritually waking up in the unlimited cycle, that's Sangam Yuga. But then even the everyday cycle, before the sun rises, so between 3 and 5, that time is called Brahma Mahurat, the period when you are facing the Brahma, when you are experiencing the Brahma, the soul world, or experiencing Brahma, the creator of the new world. And so Brahma Mahurat. The second is, Brahmin is the one who eats Brahma Bhojan. Brahma Bhojan means pure food. Food cooked in the remembrance of God and eaten in the remembrance of God. It's very important not to just eat in the remembrance of God, but also to cook in the remembrance of God and then to be offered to God and then eaten. So three steps. Cook in the remembrance of God, then offer it to God, and then eat in His remembrance. In the Gita, it is very clearly written, those who do not offer to God, those who do not eat in His remembrance, they are thieves. Why they are thieves? What does a thief do? He steals, no? He steals. Without the knowledge of the owner. So if we are eating without offering to Baba, the one who has given us the food, because we say God is feeding us. So if God is feeding us, that means He is giving us food. And if we are not remembering Him or offering Him before eating, then we are thieves. No? We are just eating up something not remembering that one or offering that one, the one who has given it to us. And therefore, it's very important that we offer first before we eat. But then even before we offer, what we offer should not be something which should not be offered to God. With something which should not be offered, which is impure. How can you offer that to God? So you have to cook in God's remembrance, and only that you have to cook which you can offer to God. If you can't offer something to God, you should not even cook that. Because you're not going to offer it, you can't. But of course, circumstances are such where some people have to cook, that's different. But then you can't offer that to God. So what you cook, what you cook should be only that what you can offer to God. And after offering to God, only you can eat as something which has been given to you by God. It doesn't belong to you. It's God's offering, and therefore that offering becomes very, very pious, very holy, very sacred, very pure. That's why something which is an offering to God and that which is given to us should never be thrown away, should never be, ignored. It should be used in a worthwhile way. So that's keeping the holiness, the sacredness of it. So we say, the second is Brahma Bhojan, pure food. And the third is Brahma Gyan. So Brahma Gyan, that means the true knowledge of the Brahma, of the soul world, of God, of the soul. What we call a spiritual knowledge. If someone does not have a spiritual knowledge, he is not considered to be a Brahmin. Brahmin must have spiritual knowledge because he has to protect the religion. He has to protect the souls. So, Brahma Gyan, knowledge, we say spiritual knowledge. What is spiritual knowledge? Spiritual knowledge means knowledge of the soul, knowledge of God, knowledge of karma philosophy and knowledge of the cycle of time. What time are we passing through now? What Baba says that A, B, C, D, that's the essence of the whole knowledge or whatever gyan Baba is giving to us. This is spirituality. spirituality stands above religion. Because today this word religion has been, you know, defamed. People on the name of religion think it's just physical religion. But actually the religion means the dharma. And dharma in Sanskrit means something to be imbibed, something to be inculcated. And that is the inculcation of virtues, inculcation of peace, of happiness. So that's the real dharma. So Baba said, peace is your religion. Love is your religion. So all these qualities, they are your true religion. Not the Hindu or is Muslim or Christian or all that. That all depends on in whose house you, whom you are born. Maybe you adopt that religion. But the true religion is of the soul, and that is peace. So we say Brahma Gyan, the one who has this Gyan, this knowledge of values, of the self, of God, of karma philosophy, of the cycle of time, he has the real Brahma Gyan. He is a true Brahmin. And that's what he has to study all the time, and that's what he has to teach everyone all the time. That's why Baba keeps telling us that don't go into other matters. Don't go into worldly things. They are not meant for you. And if you are talking, okay, you may not be talking impure words, but even mundane things, worldly things, sharing worldly news about this one, that one, that one, that one, you are making your mouth bitter. How can you sweeten your mouth, Baba said in today's Murli? You are making your mouth bitter in this way. But how to sweeten your mouth? Only when you speak Baba's Gyan. And also helping the Yajna in every way. Body, mind, wealth, that is one aspect. We say tan, man, dhan. And the other aspect is man, vachan, karma, mind, words and actions. So one aspect is body, mind, wealth, and the other is mind, that is thoughts, words and actions. So in this aspect also we are helping the Yajna through our thoughts, through our words, through our actions. Because we are helping God. And whatever work we do in the Yajna, that is helping God. So every task we do is a dignity. It's not just distribution of work. For example, you're having a program in your center and you're allotted some duties. And you say, okay, you're told you distribute pamphlets, you do the cleaning, you do the washing, you do the cooking, you know, everything. But somebody may say, oh, he is given an important job, I'm given a very low job. Why am I not given that job? Why am I given this low job? It's not that. Every task is a task of dignity because it is God's work. It's not that giving a lecture is something very elevated task and scrubbing and swabbing and cleaning is a very low task. No. All are important tasks which are for helping God. You know, in India there are many examples of this type. Big rich people, I don't know, must be in everywhere, in every country, every religion. Even rich people who may never even go to the kitchen to take a glass of water for themselves because they have servants who give them even a glass of water on a platter. And they don't do any other physical work in that way. But then they go to temples and clean the floor. They go to the gurudwaras and feed people, give water to people, you know, they are helping people in a physical way. At home they don't do any physical work. They are too rich, they have many servants around them to do their work. But they go specially to serve people by giving something to them. Feeding them, giving them water, whatever. Cleaning. Because they say in this way God will be pleased because we are doing God's work. So here, Every task is God's work because God has created this sacrificial fire. So this is a sacrificial fire. The whole yajna, we say. Madhuban is a yajna. Even your centers are the yajna created by God. And you are the caretakers of this yajna, the protectors of this yajna. So when you think in this way, the intoxication grows and the responsibilities also grow. And responsibility, as I said, serving through thoughts, words and actions. So every thought you create should be for the protection of the yajna. Every word you speak should be for the protection of the yajna. Every action you do should be for the protection of the yajna. Therefore, Baba says, do not do anything which will harm the yajna or which will defame the yajna. Because even if one person does something wrong, the whole yajna will be defamed, the whole organization will be defamed. Is it not just that Baba gives an example, if you are cooking rice, now how do you know that the rice is cooked? You won't be, you know, feeling every grain of rice to see it is cooked. You just pick up one grain. And if that grain is cooked, you say that means the whole pot is cooked. And if one grain is, it seems, not cooked, that means nothing is cooked. So from that one grain, you come to know about the whole pot. Similarly, if one person does something wrong against the yajna or defames the yajna, then the whole yajna is defamed. People will think, oh, they're all like that. Even if one person does something wrong. So we have such a big responsibility. And then Baba also says in the Murlis, someone who serves others, gives jnana, and people ask, from where you got this knowledge? And you say, God has given this knowledge to me. God is imparting knowledge to me. And you talk such big things, and after maybe 2 years, you are no more with Baba and on a holiday. And then that same person meets you and he sees you in a very ordinary form, no more in the Brahmin family. He says, what happened? You told me that God was doing, what happened? And so, oh, it was all a mistake, you know. And all Maya catches that person. So Maya is there all the time, trying to put obstacles in the yajna. That's what they show in the scriptures. The devils trying to put obstacles in the yajna, not allowing the fire to be continuously lit. And we have to make sure that we do not allow that Maya to come. Come what may. We are the protectors of the yajna. So keeping this in mind, we have to always make sure that I am the protector of the yajna. I am the protector of the yajna. I have to protect. I am responsible. On one hand, I am responsible. On the other hand, I am only an instrument in the hands of God. What we call as karma yogi. In the Gita, karma yoga has a very big importance. People in today's world, they don't understand the meaning of karma yoga to that extent. They say karma yoga means work is worship. Karma and yoga. Work is worship. They have yoga with the karma. They have yoga with their actions. They are too action conscious. You know, a nurse will say, I remember we had a nurses conference, and you know, many of these nurses, they don't get married. They want to be a nurse lifelong and they don't want to get married. So some of them say, I'm married to my profession. My profession. I like to keep working. I like to keep working. So work is worship for me. That's what many will say. So work is worship. And they think this is karma yoga. When I have yoga or concentration only on my karma. But the Gita has a different meaning to karma yoga. Karma yoga does not mean concentrating only on the karma. But karma yoga means doing the actions with your hands in the remembrance of God, and after the action is complete, surrendering the result to God to do whatever He wants to do. In Sanskrit, a very beautiful phrase, karmane vadhika raste ma phaleshu kadachanam. You do your utmost, the best you can, and leave the fruit to God. Don't think of the fruit. That is called becoming an instrument in the hands of God. God is using you and your hands are working as you are an instrument under God's hands, and you do the work, and whatever is the result, leave it to God, whether it's good or bad. And if it is good, great success, don't have the ego, I did it. I was only an instrument in the hands of God. God did it. A knife will not be proud of itself if it has cut something, because somebody is using that knife. The one who uses it, that one will be proud, not the knife. So I'm just an instrument. The microphone will not be proud if I give a good class, a good lecture, and you say thanks and you appreciate. The microphone is only a medium. So I'm only a medium. If you're appreciating, if you're liking it, you're praising God. I should not take that praise myself, because I'm only an instrument. So if there is success, what is there to be proud of? You should thank God, because that one, He was the one who helped, the one who did it. I was only an instrument. But if there is no success, I'm not sad. I'm not unhappy. Because, well, I did my best with Baba's help. I did my best. Baba knows best. He's the one who is to give the result, the response or the reward or whatever. I do only my duty. So karma yoga means karma, doing the karma, the actions, in the remembrance of the Supreme, as an instrument, and surrendering the results to God, whatever it may be. If there's success, no ego, no arrogance, I did it. I was the one who brought the success. No, no. And if there's no success, then also no sorrow. At least the best was done to the maximum extent. So I do the best as much as I can and leave the rest to God. This is the true meaning of karma yoga. So that's what we are in the yajna. Doing every task as a dignity of work. Because it's God's work, I'm only an instrument. And leave for the success or whatever the result is to God to give. I should not be worried about that. I do the best I can. That's why, you know, doctors, when they are treating a patient, they say, I treat and God cures. We only treat. We can't say that I can cure you, I can only treat you, but leave the rest to God. When somebody is like a hopeless case, the doctor, the patient's relatives will come to the doctor and say, Doctor, please save him, please save him. He should be saved. The doctor will say, okay, you remember God, I'm trying my best. You remember God, because the relatives can't do anything, they will just pray, that's all. So he tells them, you just pray. And we are doing the best we can of treating that patient. And the others can only pray to God, you know, for God to help. Because doctor is just doing his job of working, his responsibility is only that much. But if it is that the fate of that patient is to die, what can the doctor do? That's his fate. You know? So this is what Baba says, you do your best. And don't think of the result. Don't think of success or no success. You do your best and leave the rest to God. This is the real task as a dignity, whatever we do in the yajna. Very often, you know, Baba's children, they feel very upset. Oh, I did so much. I worked so hard. I did so much. And no result. So Baba says, never think like that. So you are the protectors of the yajna, you are the caretakers, it's God's work going on, You do your best, consider everything to belong to Baba and use it as a trustee. And then see how your stage will rise. You'll have a big boost in your stage and you'll be flying under God's canopy of protection. Okay? Huh? Om Shanti, Om Shanti. So let us now sit in that consciousness that we are the protectors of God's yajna, sacrificial fire. And in this fire, the whole world will be incinerated. The whole world will be transformed. The whole world will be purified. All the souls will be liberated and will get mukti and jivan mukti, liberation. There's an announcement. All the Caribbean meeting with Sister Mohini is not tonight, but tomorrow morning, immediately after class at Dadi's cottage upstairs. So the Caribbean meeting with Sister Mohini is for tomorrow morning after class, not today. Shanti. So now let us sit with that consciousness. So each one is the protector of the yajna. Even if you are 1 month old, 2 months old in jnana, or 2 years old, 20 years old, whatever you are, the one who comes to Baba and has the faith that God has come and is giving me this jnana, giving me this knowledge for, and I'm transforming for the new world, I will return home with Baba, who has all this faith and the intoxication, is a protector of the yajna. However young or old he may be in jnana, even 1 day old. So, we sit with that consciousness and think of the unlimited. How I can protect the yajna in an unlimited way. Considering this body, mind and wealth to belong to Baba. Becoming a trustee. Saying to Baba, Baba, everything belongs to you. Using my thoughts, words and actions in a worthwhile way. Using them only for a spiritual cause. Even if it's any mundane task, it's a dignity because it's God's task. In a second, I detach myself from any type of possessiveness because nothing belongs to me. Not even my physical body. Nor my mind, nor any type of physical possessions. The movable and immovable property. Everything belongs to you, Baba. am only its trustee. I belong to you, and therefore everything I have belongs to you. Even this mind is yours, Baba. I cannot think of any worldly thoughts in this mind, as it belongs to you. I promise you, Baba, I will not do any action which could defame the yajna. As I am a responsible soul, the caretaker of the yajna, I am also an instrument soul, an instrument in your hand. You working through me. You give the strength. You give the inspirations. I'm only an instrument. I do the best and leave the rest to you. In this way, I become so light. Free from all worries. I become detached in a second. as now it is time to return home. Time to free the self from all bondages in order to return home. I can visualize my home in a second. The world of infinite golden red light. My eternal home. To be with you in the soul world, to be like you, perfect and complete.